Thank you for that. And Jan did send her apologies. She really wanted to be here today, but I think staying home was the better idea for her, for your sakes. 1006, I don't remember ever having sung that song before. That was a really interesting song, and it hit exactly on what we were talking about. So Will always calls if he's going to be the song leader to ask what he can sing about, and he actually picked a song, as I said, not familiar to me, but that had one of the passages that we're going to look at today. So good work, Will. Talked about the Prince of Peace. I admit it, I grew up in the 60s as an impressionable young kid. And one of the slogans of the day was peace, love, and stop the war. And how telling is that of our societies that in the 1960s, stopping a war was so much in the mindset of America. And if I go back to the Old Testament, David, a man after God's own heart, was not able to build the temple. It had to wait for his son because God said, "You are a man of war." And that's not the kind of person who can build my temple. So thousands of years apart, and still we struggle with peace. Today's reading was a celebration of the birth of John the Baptist. If you remember the background to that, his father had been mute for the better part of a year. And why? Because when the angel came to him, he didn't believe that this was going to be possible, that he would have a son in his and his wife's old age. And he was chastised by the angel, and who said, "You won't be able to speak." And so for the time of her pregnancy, he wasn't able to speak. And yet the people, as he came out, knew that something has happened because he couldn't speak. It was clearly a sign from God that he had some kind of encounter in the temple. And the only thing that broke that was when the child's mother said, "The name is going to be John." And they all looked around. "You don't have a John in your family. Why are you calling him John?" And so they turned to Zechariah, who wrote, because he couldn't speak, "His name is John." And immediately, it tells us, his tongue was loosened. He could celebrate. And pent up, this celebration brings forth what we read, what Andrew read for us earlier, in praise to God. We see in this song that not just Zechariah, but all of Israel were looking for an answer to an inner longing. He calls for praise to God because God is answering their cries for help. He's sending the promised king. And this king is going to quell the fear in their hearts. Fear prevents us from having peace. This promised child that we celebrate at this time of year was going to finally get rid of that fear and bring us peace. Verse 71, Zechariah says, "We need salvation from our enemies," that God is going to deliver us from the hand of those who hate us. And then again in verse 74, he says he's going to send this child to rescue us from the hand of our enemies and enable us to serve without fear. This was the promise that he saw fulfilled in this child. And it's not just Israel. We talked about that earlier. Peace is something that is universally sought. The word is used about 250 times in the Bible. We sing a song. The Lord be gracious and give you peace. And that comes directly from Numbers 6 and 26. Peace is one of the core things that we need to survive and to thrive. After losing all that he held dear and sitting for 7 days and seven nights with his friends, Job begins to pour out his heart to those friends. And as he does, he says in his loss, I have no peace, no quietness, I have no rest, but only turmoil. And we know his story. We know the things that happened to him. Yet that's such a common theme for all people. We talked about it in our class today, and Sharon pointed out that sometimes we just need to think about the fact that so many people have so much more to deal with than we do. We want to think of ourselves as being hard done by, but we're not really. And yet, in our core, in a broken world, we have fear and we don't have peace. The sons of Korah are an interesting story. Korah, in the time of Moses, rebelled, and most of his family was swallowed up by the earth. Yet some of the young children were spared, and they went on to become really important. Samuel came from that line, and others wrote psalms. There's about 11 psalms that are attributed to the sons of Korah. One of them is 85. In Psalm 85, if you turn to that, verses 9 through 11 say the following: Surely his salvation is near those who fear him, that his glory may dwell in our land. Love and faithfulness meet together, righteousness and peace kiss each other. Faithfulness springs forth from the earth, and righteousness looks down from heaven. Well, that's interesting. It starts off by saying, those who fear God. I thought we talked about the fact that fear was the opposite of peace. How is it that we're supposed to fear God and still have peace? Well, they give us the answer. In God, love and faithfulness are joined. And righteousness and peace, he says, kiss each other. They're inseparable. Because God's faithfulness is forever. God's righteousness is untestable. The fear that we have that he talks about here for God is not one of being afraid. It's a reverence. It's respecting the fact that God encompasses all righteousness. And these sons of Korah sing this song to recognize that in God we finally have balance between peace and love, faithfulness and righteousness. A different Zechariah than the one we're reading about today paints a picture that rings true with all of us. He's trying to comfort Israel in a time of distress, and he describes his vision. In his vision, he spoke of riders that went out through the whole world as watchmen. And he says, they searched and found the whole world at rest and peace. In every corner that they could find, there was tranquility and peace. People need peace. The opposite, stress and fear, they're not healthy. But God, Zechariah says, has answered that question with a child. After establishing that unrest and anxiety are the norm in a fallen world, and that peace is something universally needed, and that this promised child will bring that, Zechariah celebrates that his son will help usher this in. And recall that this son that he's talking about, John, is not going to live an easy life. He's going to live out in the desert, wearing rough clothing, eating stuff that we don't think is very good at all. And his life is going to end in imprisonment and wrongful death. And still, Zechariah rejoices in what God will fulfill. John was sent to guide us to the one who could bring true peace. In verse 76 of our passage, Zechariah begins, "And you, my child," and then if I skip down a little, "will go on before the Lord to prepare the way for him, to guide our feet into the path of peace." This is his celebration for what his son will do as part of God's plan. And I think it's interesting the way he says he will guide our feet into the path of peace. Peace is not a state, but it's a path. It's a direction. It's somewhere we're headed. There are false paths and there are dead ends. Have you ever hiked in an area where there's a lot of trails? It's really popular. It's more difficult to find your way there than if you're out in the middle of nowhere and there's just a single track that you can follow. When people have cut their own shortcuts off the main trail, it's easy to go in the wrong direction if there's multiple intersections and Y branches. Go up to Kelso sometime, where the woods are crisscrossed with paths. Hey, don't make a wrong turn, though, because the cliffs are pretty high. You come up on them pretty suddenly. It's the same with peace. We want it so badly, we're inclined to take the first option that seems good to us or gets us in the general right direction of tranquility, even if it has little substance. But God's plan is firm. Isaiah, as we sung about in 1006, he looked forward to the day when Jesus would come. There's only one true path to peace. It's the man Jesus. Isaiah chapter 9, verses 6 and 7. "For to us a child is born, and to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace there will be no end." So peace is a heart need that we all have. But God's peace is not like the world's peace. The world's answer to strife is to get away from it. If your work life is too hectic, your doctor might tell you, take a vacation. Get away from it. Surround yourself on an island with no stress, and you'll have peace. Or more chillingly, no war. My good friends, for the second time in our history, a British Prime Minister has returned from Germany bringing peace with honor. I believe it is a peace for our time. Go home and get a nice quiet sleep. Neville Chamberlain, September 30th, 1938. Chamberlain's appeasement philosophy lasted barely a year. By that time, the same Nazi Germany that Chamberlain had lauded for their peaceable ways had invaded Poland, and England joined France in declaring war. It's really easy for us from our armchairs so much later to criticize, but the mood in Europe was clear to do anything to avoid war. The memory of the Great War was still fresh in their minds. They could see it on the wounds of people who'd been through it, and even the land showed the scars. And so it was very common and very popular, and people bought into what Neville Chamberlain was saying. But we know how that ended. Jesus says something different. In John chapter 14 and 27, he says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid." It's not like the world's peace. It's a gift. How does the world give? The world gives in a way that says, if you just get out of that situation, it'll be fine. The world thinks that peace is all about no warfare and quiet. But the real peace needs to be established between us and God. Then everything else falls into place. As I mentioned in the class earlier today, Jesus understood that peace inherently. It's what allowed him to fall asleep in the back of a boat while seasoned fishermen were terrified for their lives. He knew that God had his life in his hands. Some of you know that I've been on water drilling trips. And my experience in Guatemala really shook me up. We were in a compound in a nice town. I would go there and visit if I had the chance again. But it was walled, surrounded by razor wire at the top, and we had an armed guard with a semi-automatic weapon 24 hours a day because they didn't feel like it was safe, that somebody might try to break in and steal something, might try to break in and harm us. And that razor wire, more than anything else, just, I couldn't handle that. Why is it that we need that kind of deterrent in order to have this? And then when I saw that guard making his rounds with a rifle, I thought, this isn't what God intended. And this is a Christian organization. But they feel that they need to have that in order to keep us safe. Now, we went out into the area where we're going to drill, and we met and stayed and ate with the local people, and they had no fear for that. But back in the city, they had fear. The peace that Jesus grants us is an inheritance. If you think about when he said this, John chapter 14, this is his final farewell to them. This is as he's about to go to Calvary. He is giving them the comfort that they need. And we know that it's going to be very difficult for them going forward. They're going to have real fear after what happens at Calvary. And so he says, I am giving you a gift. That gift he's giving them probably is tied up in the Holy Spirit. It's an inheritance that both they and we have to keep us safe, to keep us from fear, because he's called the Comforter. He'll always be there, always be pointing us back to God. All this to say that God's peace is not like the world's peace. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 9, we're told, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." Jesus is affirming that peace is the nature of God, And when we make for peace, God's DNA is showing through in us. Now, I'm not saying that God has DNA. I don't think he does. You get my point. His essence shows through us when we are peaceable people. And despite the fact that Jesus' peace does not take us out of the strife, we can find tranquility. In Matthew chapter 11, he says, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." What's going on out there in the world doesn't matter, because I have you. I am taking care of you. Finally, Colossians chapter 1, verses 19 and through and 20. "For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile him to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross." Reconciliation. God acting in our world. It's not mutual. We didn't do anything to reach out. God reached down to us. Through his Son, Paul affirms, "in whom all fullness dwells." So there's a person that delivered this peace. It is his Son. And how did he do that? Well, Paul says, he made peace through his blood. Even God found no other option but blood. Why? Why did God do this? Well, going back to what Zechariah had to say earlier, Zechariah, I think, hits home. Beginning in verse 78, why did God do this for us? Because of the tender mercy of our God. Why did he do this? To take us from darkness to light. To take us from the shadow of death to the substance of God. Death has no hold over us, because we are in God. And therefore, Jesus comes to bring us peace. Peace of mind, knowing that we have a place, that our names are written in the book. We don't need to have fear. Peace is one of the most sought-after commodities, but it's also one of the most difficult things to achieve. Earthly peace is ephemeral because we live in a broken world. John came to point us to the path of peace. That path is Jesus. He was selected by God to lead us to peace. And his peace is not like the world's. It's not rooted in emotion or what's going on around us, but rather in the substance of God's love for us. His peace is our inheritance that he gives to us. He says to his disciples in his final shalom, "I leave you peace, my peace, not like the world's fleeting peace, but a peace that," Paul says, "passes understanding, a peace that triumphs over fear." It's a costly peace, no doubt about it, but it's a final peace. Because this peace repairs the rift between us and God. Because once we have God living in us, we can be at peace with ourselves. We can be at peace with others because we have peace with God. And we can finally accept and understand God's grace. The angels sang of peace on earth because the child was about to be born. But that child was born to climb Calvary's mountain and give himself as a sacrifice for our rebellion. Celebrate peace but more so celebrate the God who gave of himself to achieve it. I'm going to leave you with a little acrostic, so if you don't remember anything else, this will probably stick in your mind. Think of yourselves writing the word peace this way. Peace. Perfect ease at Christ's expense. Perfect ease. We can have no fear because of what Christ did for us. And we celebrate the baby, but even more so, we celebrated the fact that his Father raised him to newness of life after he gave for our behalf. Thank you.